Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who's considering buying an island. It's Richard Herring! Thank you very much. Oh, you must be much better than last week's audience. They nearly stopped clapping by the time I got... They were cunts. They were cunts. That's next week's audience. No, it's all right. This isn't the first show. The next week's the first. The one with Rhys Shearsmith was on first. You must remember the order of things. Were you not here 2 weeks ago? Welcome. Come on in. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I was talking to Rednecks the other day. Remember the band Rednecks? Remember them? Remember? Cotton Eye Joe? Pig in a poke? Uncle John up the... tree. They call it Rahalastapas, I don't know, but in a Scandinavian accent. I was on holiday in the Isle of Arran, which is where I used to go when I was a kid with my family, so it was like 50 years before I had been to the Isle of Arran and went again. Hasn't changed. I think it generally has. My mum said there's some swings by at one point they were there 50 years ago and were there 25 years ago when she was last here. So it's a beautiful place, do go. But opposite where we were staying, there was an island with a lighthouse on it, and my son really wanted to go and visit it. And then I just was looking up local house prices, to see how much it would cost to live on the Isle of Arran. And that whole island was for sale, right? It's a 28-acre island with a lighthouse on it and a 6-bedroom apartment that needs a little work. It only costs £350,000. And I thought I could own an island. I could, sell my house and go and buy an island and live just off the Isle of Arran. It'd be quite inconvenient because I don't have a boat or a helicopter. But I thought I could crowdfund that if I'd put a Kickstarter together. I reckon I could do it. But I think if I did it, it should just be on the understanding that I have to live on the island for a year and I'm not allowed to come off. But I'm not going to. Good though, wouldn't it? Imagine owning an island. Wouldn't it become my wife saying, "You know what? I just want to own an island. It's not even a little island. You could own 350,000. My flat in Balham, the first flat I bought that I bought for something like £92,000. The last time I looked it up on Rightmove or whatever it's called, it was worth £600,000. It's a shit flat in Balham. You could be living on an island, on the Isle of Arran. King of all you survey. Plus, there were like loads of stones on there. So I'd just be, I could literally clear the whole thing. It's actually smaller than the field. About the same size. Anyway, that's that. What other amusing things have happened to you, Richard, since the last series? My son is definitely, my son is just exactly me as a child, except slightly more confident. That is, so this is slightly worrying. So I'm pretty sure he's going to be a comedian. And we had a family lunch the other day with my family hasn't all been in the same room. My brother, sister, my mum and dad, and various wives and husbands, and a couple of the kids were all together for this lunch. And so it'd been the first time, maybe 5-6 years, we'd all been together, and everyone was giving little speeches. And I think, I don't want to give a speech, I don't care. But everyone said, my parents are saying how proud they were of us all, even me. They're proud of this. And my brother said something, my sister said something. Then my son got up on a chair, and he's 4 years old. And he was slightly cribbing off other people, but not really. He just very confidently went, "Uncle Duncan is not here." That's my wife's brother. He wouldn't be there for any reason. But all the Herring family are here, and we make a big teamwork together. And so everyone applauded him, and that was a mistake. And I didn't get all of it down. We didn't film the whole thing. But then he said, he saw this big inflatable champagne bottle. He said, "Drink while you're still alive." Given my parents were in their mid-80s, and it was good advice. And then everyone's going, "Yeah, hooray." And then he went, "We should not poo on the floor." Which is good advice. So some of it was very profound. The other thing he said, "We should wear hats." So that's... He was sort of slightly like a young Jesus, I thought. Sort of proclaiming, but it was absolutely terrifying. But yeah, there we go. Don't poo on the floor. And then he started talking about... He's named, not after, but I've had quite a lot of my relations in the past called Ernest. And I told him that his great-uncle Ernie had died in the Battle of Dunkirk, or just before, actually, as it turned out. And so then he started trying to tell the story of Ernie having died in the war, which was exciting as well. That was my... It was very inappropriate in a lot of ways. Oh, I said, if I have my own island, what I'd like to do is sort of be a Scottish Jeffrey Epstein. That's what I was sort of like. You can have... Couldn't it be good? Because you've got your own island. It's your own laws. You can do anything you want. And I could have sex parties on there. But I thought it would only be with Scottish celebrities, wouldn't it? No one's going to travel to go to a horrible island off a cold, rainy other island. So I thought the sex parties would probably just be me and the crankies. But I'd be up for that. And it's still underage, isn't it? It's still a schoolboy, so you might get a couple of them. If you're listening, Prince Andrew. Kind of. The beauty of Wee Jimmy Cranky is, you know, you get all the fun and it's not illegal. So it's all the fun. my guest today is probably best known for playing Greg in Chubby Funny. Don't like that. Will you please welcome the incredible Pierre Novelli, ladies and gentlemen? Here he is. Here he is. Look at that. How are you doing?
I'm all right. Yeah.
Good.
How are you doing?
I'm very good. You're kind of a giant. You're kind of like a giant person. Like you look like a sitting next to me. I've just been watching the BFG with my kids, and you're kind of like. I feel like the little girl in the BFG, and you're the BFG.
I'm climbing in through your window with a long trumpet.
Yeah. That's what I feel like, especially now. And you've just come in. Have you grown in the last...
It's when seated, I think.
Okay. Massive.
It's because I'm tall and butt wide.
Okay.
I think if you look like Stephen Merchant and you're tall and narrow,
yeah,
people just go, "You're tall, yes."
Yeah.
Even though he's taller than me, but... My friends at school said I looked like I've been badly photoshopped into all the pictures of us. And they said, "You've been photoshopped in, but the scaling's wrong." Or you were in the picture normally, but someone cut round you and they enlarged you, but they held down shift. So the enlarging was in proportion. Okay. They were quite specific about
it's,
how.
It's well worked out.
Yeah.
You asked me about what you should wear to the podcast, yeah. Day, and then...
And you said, the sexiest things you own. I want people titillated, that's what you said.
It's nice, little comment. Yeah. I thought you'd maybe jogged in or something and were going to change when you got here, but...
No. You said, French exchange, summer edition. And I responded.
But, you know, they're very strong legs, tree-trunk legs. Very distracting. Can you tell us about Greg in Chubby Funny before? I know you must have been asked about this a lot.
Oh, yeah. It was a part that was largely cut from an indie film.
Okay.
That was written and directed by my friend. Although as part of the shooting, and one of the bits that was cut was I was massaged quite heavily by Dave Benson Phillips.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Wow.
And as a foreigner, I was not fully acquainted with Dave Benson Phillips's oeuvre.
Yeah.
I just knew him as a sort of a man who kept sort of getting caught up in memes.
Yes.
And he's a good massager.
Okay.
Shoulder massager.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not, I had a not few... so good at the other body parts.
Dog shit. Yeah. Terrible. Violent and unthinking. No, he was very nice. And
yeah.
He was very nice, and we did some fun riffing and stuff, all of which was just immediate. You could just practically see people going, we'll cut this. But it was fun to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had to play a chugger.
Oh, yes, charity mugger.
Yeah.
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 Good. Were you successful as a charity mugger?
In the fiction?
Yeah, in the fiction, did it? Because they're always...
I was successful in the fiction, going door to door and kind of harassing people for money. And the main character was not, and that was the... I think the source of the humour of the scene.
Okay. I must check it out.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Usually I try to choose something that isn't very good. I saw your show in Edinburgh. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Like, too much.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I've seen you before, and I don't think I've seen a full-length show. And again, there is a different full-length show on YouTube that people can see for free.
Yep.
This is a new thing that a lot of comics are doing. I didn't write down the name of that particular show.
It's called Quiet Ones.
Yes, that is correct. Yeah. Yes, it is. Yeah. Well done.
It's part of the general bonfire of comedy where you just go, well, just put it on the fucking internet. Who cares? Just go. Just throw it on there.
It's a good thing to do because you can direct people to it, and then if they like it, they'll come see it. That's a very funny special.
Oh, thank you.
Well, and the Edinburgh show was really great. I saw it when I was tired near the end, and I kind of I've got to try and go and see something, and it really gripped me. And as I was saying to you backstage, because the show's about not really being.
Not enjoying stuff.
And I'm really... Like, I often sit in any kind of form of entertainment and think, when is this going to be over? And then afterwards, I kind of retrospectively enjoy it.
Yes.
Whereas with you, I enjoyed it at the time and haven't thought about it since.
So I finally gave you a taste of what entertainment is like for normal people. Yeah. That was fun. I'll delete it from my brain. It will never trouble me in the dark of night again.
Whereas often I watch a film and then go, I didn't really like it. Then I'll think about it. Go, yeah, it was good actually. So yeah, it's sort of.
Yeah.
But the show is about that show is which is called Why Can't I Just Enjoy Things?
Yeah.
Which is a question I feel very strongly about myself. So I think people who like my stand up will enjoy your stand up in that.
Misanthropes.
I think it's misanthropes, and also it's taking an idea and really running with it. If you watch the online show, there's a fantastic. There's a few really really great routines. A really great one about Charles Manson.
Oh yes,
deciding to have a swastika put on his face mid trial, which I didn't. Yeah. It's just a great bit of information to find out.
I laughed a lot when I found that out. You explore it
very brilliantly, but it is just hilarious that he would kind of go up, be halfway through the trial and decide to do it.
You'd think, you know what? People need to know more about who I am without talking to me.
Yeah. So it's about, and there's a, and the routine about if chickens didn't exist and you told a farmer that they wouldn't believe this incredible
magic animal.
Yeah.
The perfect animal.
Which is, again, a very, I've seen someone say your stuff is like observational comedy for people who who hate observational comedy.
Yeah, or who think they hate it.
Yeah.
If you think you're too good for it,
yeah,
you're probably like the version of exactly what you hate that I do. It's like, it's sort of the, I don't know, it's the stand-up equivalent of going, oh, fried chicken is an awful plebeian food, but goujons, they're great. I'm a goujon merchant. Sneaking it into people.
But it's, I mean, all comedy is based on some form of observation, really. It has to be. come from somewhere.
Yeah.
Something's been observed, even if it's something surreal and weird, it's still an observation and a take on something. And I suppose the thing with observational comedy is it's difficult because many of the subjects have been covered.
Fairly extensively.
And so most things have been covered. So to find... And I think in the Why Can't I Just Enjoy Things, that you do a routine about children being told there are children in Africa who love that food, which, again, is a well-covered trope.
Yes.
But you do manage to find a different way of dealing with it. And I think that's when me and Stu started out, right, we said we won't do jokes about this, won't do jokes about this. We tried to avoid the common subjects. But actually, weirdly, both of our successful projects once we stopped working together were Jerry Springer and the Opera, where we said we would never do comedy about personality, and Talking Cock, where we said we won't do obvious jokes about penises. And both of those, by coming at them from a different angle, were a way to find something new. So in a way, by something being well-trodden, if you can find the new joke in it, it's quite...
The reward is almost more disproportionate.
Yeah.
Finding that hidden segment of the orange that's been otherwise punched into dust by thousands of comedians.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's sort of, it is important to try and be original as a comedian. And it is, and with the number of people doing it and the number of people who have done it, it's...
And Twitter.
Yeah. It's almost impossible to come up with a new joke. But I think if you're doing observations or if you're doing routines, and it's very much about a persona, I suppose, with you, but it chimed with me in that, I find it difficult to enjoy things. I like to be very pedantic about stuff. I don't get too excited about anything. To the extent, I mean, the show, to slightly ruin your show for anyone who's going to see it.
Yeah, spoiler alert. We may cut this.
I mean, it ends in you finding out that... I do a
test to see how far along the spectrum I am, and the test says, yeah, you're pretty fucking... you're, like I say in the show, not NASA, but European Space Agency. Sort of up there.
So after the show, I thought, it's so chimed with me. I thought I'd better go and take those tests to find out whether my obsessive desire to clear all the stones off a field and so on... might be indicative of something, but I came out of a bang on average normal person and I was
really?
Very upset. Yeah.
Oh. Even with was there a question about playing snooker against yourself?
I think maybe I'm so far around that I'm maybe on the second or third lap.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like the world's fastest man. I'm sort of going, this can't be him finishing the race.
But that was a theme in this fringe, wasn't it? I think that a lot of
neurodivergence is the word.
I was going to say load of mental comedians, but that you can't say that anymore.
Freaks,
thanks
really.
Thanks to political correctness gone mad. You can't the things you can't say anymore. I still try and say them, though, don't I? And no one cares. So it's weird how you can do that. It's interesting how many... I mean, you would think that would be a... It's hard... We were sort of talking about this backstage. It's hard to know whether that's something to do with just being a comedian. There's a certain mindset of being a comedian.
I don't think anyone fully well would do this long enough to get good at it.
Yeah.
I think lots of people try it, and when they see how horrifying it is to sort of ritually humiliate yourself, they go, oh, well, no, I'll never do that again. Whereas I think there's something a bit wrong with you if you go, I want to do that for the rest of my life.
Well, and also to put yourself... this fringe, I only did half the fringe, but I really sort of was thinking about the past and thinking about all the terrible things that happened to me in Edinburgh that I put myself through. And
the puppet being wanked off by the
puppet, that's just the start of it.
Yeah. An ill omen for me.
It was. But so many kind of, every fringe, you're almost suicidally depressed or at least like extremely depressed. There were certainly times when I, you know, was edging towards being suicidally depressed. Yeah. And you would, and all these comedians who have these mental difficulties putting themselves through the yeah. most stressful possible.
It is the wrong way round.
Yeah.
The only people who are doing the fringe should be completely sort of mentally healthy, like Mormons, like clean living, cheerful, just like willing to withstand a month of that.
Yeah.
Not people who are already like that the rest of the year.
Yeah.
A friend of mine's worst Edinburgh moment was seeing someone's dog piss on a photo of his own face. Because his flyerer had dumped a load of flies in a bin instead of doing flyering. And enough that they were spilling out and the dog had pissed on the corner of the big bin and it was just landing on his face and he was looking at it in the rain. And I think he'd got a 2-star review. It was like so many layers of yeah, despair yeah. to it. It's like a bad music video.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it did feel that whole bin situation that we talked about last week did feel like very metaphorical about the the yeah. fridge in itself, that you end up trudging
crap everywhere,
stinking dog shit, and
the phrase rat surge.
Yeah,
they told us to watch out for a rat surge, as though we would all go right, yeah, 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 one of them. As if that wasn't the first time anyone had ever heard that phrase. Surge.
Did anyone see a rat surge?
My producer saw a cat-sized rat sort of doodling along.
Right.
Yeah. But mainly it just smelled bad. I didn't see any rats. I was expecting a rat surge. I'd been promised one
by the
authorities.
So like a rat surge, presumably is a lot of rats.
I imagine them sort of boiling out of a gutter, you know. Like the scarabs in The Mummy. Just like a mime, just this skeleton left behind yeah. In an instant, like piranhas. But no, just one big fat rat just kind of ambling along. Looking at flyers.
Shall I piss on it? No, doing dog's, a piss dog's on it, yeah. pissed on that one. I'm not interested in that. Was this your best year at the Fringe? It did go very well, this show, and rightly so, I think.
It's the most I've enjoyed it, probably. It was my first year doing a solo show in the Pay What You Want model, and I felt that took a lot of pressure off.
Right.
In the sense that I sort of felt more like it was a... sort of, oh, well, some of you have just got in for free, you know, so I'm 10% more entitled to sort of mess around or feel a bit loose.
Yeah.
Whereas I think before I felt too much like, the customers are here, what if they don't like the dinner I've made? And I spent all year making this big dinner. And maybe that made me less fun. Yeah. I think the audiences can smell when you're taking your yeah. job seriously and they don't like it.
No. Well, again, it is a weird thing about comedy in that, you know, it has to be, you have to be diligent, you have to work hard, you have to really craft it, but it also has to appear effortlessly like it's being
yeah.
just thrown away.
Yeah, the
well.
More professional you are, the more people will hate it. Yeah. And therefore, the less professional you are.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, as you say, you have to spend all year training like Cirque du Soleil and then in the moment appear sort of at least drunk. If not actively forgetful.
So how many Edinburgh shows have you done?
It was number seven.
Seventh one, yeah. Because it's sort of crazy now, you know, like I've talked about you and Helen last week being kind of new comedians, but you've both been going for... I mean, I gigged with you back in, like...
We did some previews.
I feel like I did some stand-up gigs with you, like, in the 2000s, right? In the noughties.
No, I just someone who looked exactly like me.
Maybe I can't. It definitely was you, but I can't remember when anything happened.
I think we gigged together in the early, I don't know what we call them, teens.
Yeah. Okay.
And then we did a preview in that weird cinema in Brixton in 2017.
Okay.
We did an Edinburgh preview. it was quite close to the Fringe because the venue was just all like windows.
Yeah.
So it was just kind of golden light blasting the audience in the face, reminding them of, you know, the fact that it's summer and they don't have to sit in a room listening to two guys read out of notebooks. Also in a cinema, directly in the room next door is a $1 billion piece of entertainment that they could be enjoying instead of this mad shit. Yeah. But they stayed.
Yeah, they stayed. That's good. Don't remember it at all. And it was you'd obviously been working on this show for quite a while because of a lockdown. Was this the show you'd planned to bring up in 2020?
It was a version of it, yeah. So I'd done previews and things ready for 2020, and yeah. then I did a preview in February that went quite well. So I thought, oh, this would be a good year. I was wrong overall, I'd say, about 2020. I wish I could say I was diligent enough that I'd been sat like with a sort of a jeweler's eyepiece crafting it. But mostly I was just free pouring whiskey into pints of Diet Coke for a lot of the lockdown.
Yeah.
So, but I guess technically, yeah, working on it for a while.
Because it feels very, I mean, you're very good with language and it feels like everything's very precise. It's, the precision of it's great. But, you know, you use the dictionary very effectively.
Oh, yes. keep it by my bed.
So it's, you know, it felt like a lot of work had gone into it, but I don't know whether that was...
That's very kind of you.
Yeah.
Always very precise for my language. I was imitating or trying to be more like a comedian called Johnny White, Really, Really.
Right.
Who's not well known, but I'm sort of obsessed with him. He's got two albums on Bandcamp that you can listen to. And he's incredibly... All of his shows would work as prose, I think.
Yeah.
But it's florid without being inaccessible, or it's not like Self.
So, yeah.
It's not like that. There's something really great about it, and I thought, I really like this, so I'm going to imitate it.
Okay.
I'll do my own crude version.
I think, but, you know, I've found that, especially, again, taking a show and doing it for a long period of time, you just really think about so many things, but the correct word in the correct place...
Yeah.
And, you know, and using words that people aren't necessarily going to 100% definitely know the definitions of.
Yes.
I think it, you know, it's not talking down to people, but it does give a sort of extra quality to everything, I think.
I did a gig, a charity gig at the Comedy Store, and backstage was where the comedians Helen Bauer and Darren Harriott, and they were watching because there's a TV screen in the green room.
Yeah.
And I came off stage and I did the routine about chicken grease from the YouTube special where I used the word suffused.
Yes.
And apparently Helen told me she'd said to Darren watching on the screen, I love gigging with Pierre because every time I learn a new word. And I was flattered and at that moment fully aware of how commercially dead. I was like, oh, that's me done. Okay. People hate learning new words.
They shouldn't. Yeah, and it's no. It was a very enjoyable show, and you are touring it, presumably.
I'm going to take it around. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Where and when yet, but okay. Definitely, yeah.
Cool. Well, people should definitely watch out for that, and it's fantastic. You have a very neat beard.
Thank you.
I think people with neat beards are untrustworthy.
So would you say that you are an untrustworthy man?
I don't think my beard's neat. I think
it's
my
pretty
beard.
Neat.
It's just this is how it grows. I don't.
That's
I
no
don't,
excuse.
I don't groom it. I don't. You know, there's no.
That's how it grows.
Yeah.
Not a stray hair. Your beard grows like you're a video game avatar. Just into a sort of other preset head.
I would say it was messy. Yours is all sculpted. I think you're untrustworthy.
Do you not get the high hairs?
They
climb your cheek.
No, not really. No, in fact, for a long time, it didn't even. It only grew underneath my chin.
Oh.
So I didn't have anything on my actual face, and it stayed.
Like an Amish.
Yeah.
An Amish man.
Yeah. Do you think that's a fair? See, is that? I don't think it's. It's sort of. It's not a prejudice like a physical prejudice because you choose to. One chooses to groom their beard, so I think you can generalize about people who groom their beards that they are. Probably serial killers, or that's that at worst.
I don't know. I think serial killers tend to have, if they have beards, they tend to be fairly unkempt. They've been too busy doing all the stalking and killing.
The Yorkshire Ripper had a very nice
beard. Did he?
Yeah, very nice beard.
Well, I've never met him.
Yorkshire Ripper, Noel Edmonds.
Yes.
He never got to serial, but he got a couple.
I can't imagine anyone worse to dispose of a body with than Mr. Blobby. You know in films when you're only lit by the headlamps of your car and you're both in the woods digging and the body's in the boot, just Mr. Blobby falling in and screaming and waking everyone up and turning around with a spade and knocking you in. And
I trust Mr. Blobby, though. I don't trust Noel Edmonds. But I just want you to know that, because that will affect the interview, because I don't...
That's bad.
I'm not trusting anything.
That's good, though.
I like you, and...
It's
you
like
know,
Frost
you
Nixon.
Nice. Yeah.
You're on your toes,
I just don't know. I don't know, but I don't know if that says something about me or whether that's... But, you know, it's right, though, isn't it, David? Do you think?
But what about the fact that nature herself has groomed your beard? Does that not mean that your sort of untrustworthiness is even more inherent?
I think maybe if I let it grow for another week, you wouldn't feel it was so. I usually shave it off before it. Again, like when I the first time I really grew a beard was for Excavating Rita, which was a play I did in about 97, I think 97 or 98. And it only grew underneath, and I didn't shave at all.
Yeah.
And that was the only Edinburgh Fringe where I don't think I had any sex of any kind, even with the ventriloquist dummy.
So, even the dummy's head sort of slowly rotated away.
So, well, it was not an attractive sight. Maybe in my age, I'm becoming more untrustworthy. I'm a very trustworthy person. It might be something about me. Are you the Yorkshire Ripper? You've got a very Yorkshire Ripper. Yeah, that's all right, mate. You're okay.
Oh, yeah. But you've got quite a low-buttoned shirt. Does that factor in?
He's nice. He's a nice-looking boy. Is he with you, Luke? Huh? Could be by the end of the night.
Yeah. No one has hairy chests in films anymore.
No. Or hairy anything.
Yeah.
In the films I watch.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know how you'd CGI individual hairs onto the Hulk's chest. I mean, it would be a fucking pain. But still, the last person I remember having a hairy chest in a movie was Pierce Brosnan as Bond.
Yeah.
He had a proper sort of chest rug as he groaned his way through being James Bond.
Hair has become very unfashionable in all senses.
Apart from face hair.
Face hair's allowed.
That's allowed.
And, you know, it's a good way to see who you can trust and who you can't trust.
Yeah, that's why they famously wired
it. Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Let me ask you an emergency question.
Okay.
To get out of that. I've been very rude to embarrass. I've been embarrassed that I've been so rude to you to call you untrustworthy, even though I'm definitely right. Just find me a man with a groomed beard who you can trust, and then I will take back what I've said. And the crowd were silent. Do you think your obituary photo has already been taken? And if so, what is it? Or do you think it is yet to come?
Well, we took a photo in the green room earlier.
I think that could be it.
Yeah, I think so.
If we both go tonight, that will definitely... That will be it.
They say, we don't know who stabbed first. We just know one of them was untrustworthy.
One of them was untrustworthy and one of them was 10 times bigger than the other.
But you can get under, you know.
That's true.
Obituary photo. Hopefully it's not been taken, but...
Yeah.
They're always like... If you're a comedian and you die, they always use a photo of you going like, oh, like doing something zany,
yeah.
Which I think is disrespectful. But then I guess if like, you know, some famously amusing person died and they used a photo of them, that was sort of like, you know, like that you find in the back of a volume of poems.
Yes.
Sort of like turtleneck, like frowning, black and white. People would go, when did they take that? Of, I don't know, one of those entertainers from the UK that inevitably I've never heard of, who's like sort of quite fat and racially insensitive.
Yeah.
But always did like, they're always remembered really fondly in Talking Head shows in a way that I can't understand.
Right.
Yeah.
But so you were born in South Africa.
Yes.
And you grew up. But how you moved to the Isle of Man, right? Is that
yeah, Isle of Man, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, the only place more racist than South Africa. You had to really search the world for that one.
Hey, there's nowhere more racist. I will say that one of the things that I used to have a routine about, which recently we had a family wedding in the UK, and some of my relatives flew over from South Africa, and their accents are obviously phenomenally strong, is that you attract British racists like a sort of flypaper.
Right.
Genuinely, they hear your accent and they make a beeline for you because they go, that's someone who'll like what I have to say. And then they say these harrowing things to you in a kind of hushed excitement, like as if they know a joke you'll particularly love. And you have to sort of... It's very hard to know how to react because your instinct is saying, well, it would be rude to just go... fuck off into someone's face, but you can't go and like tap your nose and go, oh, I know, yeah. It used to happen a lot to me, and it's very hard to deal with. And then what was that? The rest of that routine was it's like being an inverted immigrant, because the only people happy to see you are racists. They see you somehow as reinforcements against the other immigrants, and the people who aren't happy to see you are progressive people, because they assume you're a racist because of the color of your skin and where you're from.
Yeah.
The irony does tend to escape them when they accuse you of that. But so South Africa and then the Isle of Man.
So how old were you when you moved to the Isle of Man?
As we sort of finished the move, because it was quite hard to do. It took months to sort everything out. When we sort of, as we completed the move, I turned 7, basically.
Okay.
Then I was sort of starting school and so on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but then has the Isle of Man got a lot of different references to the UK mainland?
Well, you can't say mainland. They get you. You'll be in trouble.
Will I?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry.
Watch out.
Sorry, you Manx cunts.
But you knew the right adjective, though. That's impressive.
I wrote the entry on the Isle of Man for the Macmillan Encyclopedia of the Royal Family, 1992. So I know I did
what?
Research.
Oh yeah,
I wrote the. It was just before the Royal Family imploded, so nobody has this book. I do have a copy now. I'm not credited in the book, and I'm annoyed about it because I've written at least 4 or 5 entries in there. One of them was the Isle of Man. They roll something down a hill in the Isle of Man, right? They roll a barrel with spikes on the inside down a hill.
No, they killed a witch doing that.
Okay.
Last year. No, it wasn't last year. It was hundreds of years ago, but when everyone was doing it. They've got quite specific references. I mean, it's got its own sort of Gaelic language and its own flag, its own government, and you'd be like a more insane version of Jethro if you wanted to just gig in a circuit of 7 pubs on the Isle of Man doing incredibly specific references. I've done 1 club gig on the Isle of Man. It's the only time in my life I was able to do local material.
Yeah,
I've never been able to know local things and get that kind of reaction out of people.
Yeah.
It felt like, you know, when you swim with flippers and you just go unreasonably fast. Yeah. It felt great. No wonder people do it all the time. I wish I had local material. Oh. But I don't. I have international material.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
You do a podcast with Phil Wang.
Yes.
And you're both come from kind of a similar background in a way, in that you're both sort of... Neither you don't. You're men without a country, almost, or you're men with 2 countries, and feel welcome in neither of them.
Rootless cosmopolitans,
or you feel rootless, I guess.
Yeah. Well, he moved when he was much older from Malaysia, so he's a bit more disconnected. But we're both just from hot former colonies where all the TV was like bafflingly out of date American television. So we share a lot of the same completely age-inappropriate references to sort of various sitcoms and very niche, like, animated series and things. And that was one of the weirdest transitions when I moved here, was the transition from a very American-style kids' entertainment, comic books and TV shows, to British.
Yeah.
Because I read Spider-Man in South Africa, and here's the Beano. Which is a horrifying... Spider-Man! Yeah. You know, he's fighting an octopus robot. And then the Beano was like, I shot a pea at the vicar. fuck is this? There aren't any mutants in this at all. I've never even heard of half of these comedic desserts. Why is the teacher dressed like a graduate? It doesn't make any sense.
So is that, I mean, is that what brought you two together? Is that that sort of otherness?
Yeah, I think it means that we had a lot more of the same perspectives on things.
Yeah.
And we both hate hot weather, because if you live somewhere hot, it's the least escapable type of weather.
Yeah.
If you're cold, you can warm up. But if you're hot, you're just kind of fucked. You're just going to be hot and stinky all day and tired. And it's awful.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's no good. But that's our future.
It is. So the podcast is called Bud Pod.
Bud Pod, yeah. Koji. Hey.
Yeah, so what's that?
They're all here, every listener.
I've listened to some recent episodes. So I don't know what does Koji mean.
So a guy called Jack invented it, I think, by accident, because early on Phil was determined that the podcast not become a kind of scatological jizz fest.
Yeah.
He wanted a respectable podcast he could take home to his mum. And then he ruined it himself, like in a kind of nice and ironic way, by telling a very funny story about having to sort of rifle through his own shit for the purposes of a kind of medical test.
Right.
And then that kicked off a wave of poo stories from listeners that has not ever stopped. And then we kept talking about how we should have a catchphrase. Podcasts have catchphrases, don't they? And this guy, I think it was Jack, signed off his email with "keep on jacking it" and some sort of wank story.
Right.
And I said, "There's a catchphrase." And Phil was so upset at the idea that obviously everyone listening immediately went, "Right, well that's how we'll all sign off all of our emails forever now." So that's what it stands for.
Okay.
It's also the name of quite a popular Asian spice of some kind. So
yeah.
People keep sending us photos of Koji as an ingredient and things going, ah-ha-ha, look, come, ha-ha-ha. It's inevitably on a sign in some Asian restaurant or on the back of a kind of spice container.
Yeah. Yes.
So it's become everything that Phil feared. So, good. Yeah, it's good. Yeah.
But it's, you know,
he's trapped now. He's trapped in it.
You've done like 180 episodes or something like that,
yeah,
approaching that. So
it's a lot more than I think we both thought we'd end up doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's been some pretty horrifying stories on it. Funny, but oof. There's an episode called The Nadir.
Okay.
Which is, yeah, if you listen to that.
I
tried to submit the shit story from that to the British Podcast Awards, but it was over 15 minutes in length, so I couldn't do it. It was ineligible. Yeah, it's really horrid.
Yeah, it's great. We know, but it's like the original days of podcasting. It's just
two weird guys,
two weird
about
men
poo.
Talking to each other. Yeah.
Back to basics.
It's back to the basics.
No production values.
And
no.
is that going? Is it? It's clearly you've got a following, and is it a living to do the podcast, or is it just fun to do the podcast?
It would to quote the excellent comedian Sean McLaughlin's joke. It wouldn't be a living. It would be a surviving.
Right.
I wouldn't die soon. I don't know if I could retire now.
Okay.
And the ones you've listened to, normally when we have time and energy, we put little sketches in and songs and stuff. And Phil's actually quite a good singer, so he gets to show that off.
Yeah.
But no, it's going with it. Lots of pod buds came to see the show in Edinburgh, which is very nice. Because
yeah.
It makes you realize that the thing you're putting out there, it exists and is real and people have heard it.
Yeah.
So you go, oh, thank God for that, because you're never sure.
No, and I think that, you know, well, that's what I found out with very early with podcasts is it did, you know, I mean, some of this front row attest to it, and their age attest to it, that they...
Been there from the start.
They came there from the start and have, you know...
Your disciples.
David was, I think, like about 12 when he first came. It's just been a long time. But no, it did, and you had those... You know, it's a lovely thing, and you get this community.
It's really validating.
Whichever, you know, I think that some of the podcasts are huge, obviously, and have a massive community. But there's this sustaining, I think, group of people who get you and will come and see you.
It's very validating.
Yeah.
So thank you to all the pod buds who are here now, because again, it's just like going, oh, all the listener figures aren't just like a botnet in the Philippines that my mum has paid to. Flatter me or something, like it's real. Yeah.
Yeah.
Although I don't, you know, we're not at off-menu levels. When people start saying, keep on jacking it on dating apps, then... like Papadoms or Bread level of market. Oh, sorry, I don't want to go on a second date. Don't keep on jacking it. Don't worry about it. Koji, thank you. Unmatch. That'd be good.
Yeah. We'd all like that. We'd all like to be off menu, obviously, but, you know, we just have to make do with what we got, haven't we? I'm going to ask another emergency question. I'm just doing them because I'm being embarrassing. Let me see. Let me have a little look. If your genitals had to be replaced by the face of one of the Muppets...
Oh, yeah.
The face would be able to interact and communicate in exactly the same way as the puppet.
As the character itself. Yeah. Okay.
Which puppet face would replace your genitals?
Wait, someone said Gonzo in the audience there because he's the most penile.
Yeah. Doesn't have to, you know.
He's the most penile.
But would you
of the
use
Muppets.
Gonzo as, if you're having sex, would you then force that Muppet
He'd
head
be...
to fuck someone? And that seems unpleasant.
Well, he would have he'd have something to say about it. So we'd all be getting a lot out of it, I think. He'd be saying some version of it's a living, or, you know, as you shoved his foam nose into someone. The second most penile Muppet is that American Eagle.
Eagle. Yeah.
What's his name? Sam.
Sam.
Yeah. Sam. Least imaginatively named of the Muppets.
If you were on Pointless and had to choose a Muppet to be a Pointless Muppet, which Muppet would you choose to be Pointless?
Oh.
Because I've thought about this.
Well, obviously the temptation is Dr. Bunsen Honeydew.
Yeah.
He's a man of science.
You'd probably might get that because people wouldn't know the name. They would know the character.
The green round one, who's Beaker's boss. It's unclear.
Yeah.
Beaker is an intern in his lab.
Yeah.
But without Beaker around, I imagine he's a more responsible scientist.
Yeah.
Beaker tends to be the one who causes the explosions.
Yeah.
They're never clear what Dr. Bunsen Honeydew is working on. Beaker is a much less sympathetic character if it's like a cure for some terrible disease. Keeps knocking over flasks and screaming.
I think they're...
People really hate Beaker.
I think their scene in The Muppet Christmas Carol is one of the greatest pieces of drama that has ever been seen.
Which one is that?
They come to Michael Caine and they try to get a donation out of him.
Michael Caine.
But Beaker's just going... in the background. But it's otherwise completely straight. But but Beaker's going...
but still desperate for money.
Yeah. It's absolutely brilliant. And Michael Caine's fantastic in it. I would choose Lou Zealand is the character I would choose.
Is that the cool band guy?
He throws boomerangs at the start of Muppet Christmas Carol.
Oh,
boomerang
fish guy.
Yeah, boomerang.
Oh, and I don't think
anyone would know that, but
that
now,
is niche.
But if you're asked by Pointless for a Muppet character, don't say Lou Zealand. Mine.
Yeah, maybe that's... I would like who's the one like Gonzo tends to succeed despite himself.
Yeah,
the worst one would be the. Would be Fozzie Bear.
Fozzie Bear. Yeah, and that's not going to be pointless, is it?
No.
Are you talking about being a genitals or being a pointless answer?
In every sense. He'd be doing knock-knock jokes into someone else's genitals.
He would.
And that's no good.
It is no good.
These days.
What was I going to ask you?
It's the last place to enjoy a knock-knock joke.
Oh, good. This might be... You talk about conspiracy theories in one of your shows.
Yeah.
Which conspiracy theory do you think might actually be true?
Oh, COVID from a lab. I genuinely sort of go, oh, I'm 50-50 on that. More and more, it seems like that's not true, but I still just think, it was too good at what it did. It was really good. Really
what
good
about,
at being a disease.
What about COVID not actually being real? What about that one?
COVID not being real?
Yeah, not being a thing. Being made up.
I had COVID original recipe very early on.
Yeah.
So I have to believe in it now. Unless.
Yeah. Did you, though?
Well, it's a good point.
I'm pretty much, you know, of the opinion that COVID was a real thing. We all had to stay inside and wear masks, and that was a good thing. But.
Yeah.
Since we've...
Please let me be the guest on the episode where you go full mental. please let me... let me have the honour of killing you. Chopping off your head.
How come now we're all allowed out and stuff?
Yeah.
No one's dying anymore. What's going on with that? How come everyone's all right now? Why is it all right now?
It'd be very funny to talk about the vaccination program as if it was like a UFO abduction. The government texted me. I don't know how they got my number. They told me to go to a room. Someone I've never met injected me. And now I can't get COVID anymore. Explain that.
It might be that.
Do you know anyone who, owing to COVID lasting 2 years, lost their minds, gained some brain worms?
I mean, the thing that a lot of people my age are just losing their minds.
Yeah.
Regardless. Like in a terrifying, like absolutely people you wouldn't expect.
Yeah.
Denying global warming.
Just very basic things. Yeah.
Yeah. And, COVID stuff. And, if you get onto trans.
Oh, that's everywhere.
A lot of them really don't like talking about that.
Something about locking people in their house for 2 years made them go weird. Some of us did lockdown right and just gained a lot of weight and discovered that they were technically disabled. Legally. Yeah.
Were you doing your podcast presumably through...
All the way through.
Yeah.
In fact, if you listen to Bud Pod, there's an episode where I think we have Adam Hess on, and we talk about me and Phil especially with his experience of like having rolled his eyes over like SARS and thing. We were both just like, yeah, no, it'll be fine. It'll be fine. It won't be anything. And then I think in like the next episode, I have COVID. And my younger sister texted me to say, that's the illest you've ever sounded in your life. So it's like a timeline of it. And
yeah.
People have emailed in saying, either they're a new listener going through the back catalogue or they're re-listening and they go, it's like a horrifying historical drama where I want to reach through time and warn you. Because you're all talking like, well, nothing bad could happen here in Pearl Harbor. I mean, it's a tropical paradise.
It's true.
We're so far from anything. Nothing could sneak up on us.
Although a lot of podcasts started midway through COVID, I guess.
No respect for them.
But it's interesting. There must be a lot of that because we were doing... the last ones we did in the theatre was Michael Palin and Aisling B.
Yeah.
And, even looking back a week later, I was thinking, fuck, we got Michael Palin, like a man in his 70s,
into the
central London in a full theatre right at the start of COVID.
Yeah.
And if I'd killed Michael Palin...
Oh, imagine... Yeah, but like then you would have gained all of his powers. So you would have suddenly been really good at hosting documentaries and having kind eyes on camera.
He had a heart surgery like months before, so it's like absolutely...
Yeah. You thought you'd position him in front of an enormous sort of breath cannon. People just all going, ha! All over his face.
And it wasn't insane because the next week we cancelled before everyone else cancelled. We said, well, we can't.
Yeah.
We can't do it. So we were like, amongst the first, Adam Kay had cancelled and stuff. And so he was saying he thought we should. And yeah, so it's amazing how quickly it came upon us.
Which lockdown celebrity podcast made you the most furious at the bandwagon jumping? And you thought, oh, fuck off. This is for us, the dregs, not for you.
Well, I think just generally, like everyone getting on board when there was money in it was the... And a little, I think if it had adversely affected... There's enough to go round at the moment, right? I think, even with all the extra ones that have come along. Yeah. But I think also it's so much about having the staying power, which is all I have. I can keep doing stuff forever. I can clear stones off a field.
Yeah.
I've done 130 of those fuckers.
Yeah.
So I'm going to, as long as you can keep going, because what happens is, I think the thing with successful people, like super successful people, is they can't do them because they have proper work. Once the proper work
stuff
came
to
back,
do, yeah.
They have stuff to do. I don't have anything to do.
Yeah.
I can do 4 podcasts a week.
But that's why they've all gone.
Yeah.
COVID ended and Rob Brydon remembered he hosted television shows. And didn't have to talk to Will Ferrell on Zoom. Will Ferrell also presumably quite busy.
I think it took me a long time to realise that it was a perfect opportunity to talk to people around the world.
Yeah.
And it might have been a great time to kind of make a grab. I think John Oliver was in the end the only person I really thought, I should finally get John Oliver on. which was a good decision. But yeah, maybe yeah.
Imagine a world where it had been a bad decision. Yeah. What would have had to have happened?
But as you say, all those people doing nothing,
yeah,
and you know, and just the ability to communicate, which is it. That's the weird thing again. It happened. You know, again, I'm not saying COVID was a good thing, but it happened. It happened at exactly the right point in terms of if we all had to stay inside for 2 years, technology had just got to the point where. That meant also we could talk to each other and play stupid games with each other and do quizzes with each other and stuff.
Yeah.
Because if it had happened any other time...
Even in dial-up,
yeah,
it would have been hell.
It would.
Just people playing the original Warcraft game against each other, pixels. It would have been a nightmare. Also, like, you need to lock celebrities up in their house with no attention for months for them to finally relish the idea of speaking to a stranger.
Yeah.
Because that's all that's happening to them all the time.
Yeah.
But then if you take it away... They'll talk to you on Zoom.
Yeah. So maybe we should have... Maybe I should have made a grab for more of those.
Just release a new disease.
Yeah. Next time.
Yeah.
Next time. We're prepared for the next one.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're talking about... Because I put on some weight. I lost a lot of weight last year and worked quite hard at it. And then gradually over this year, it's gone up a bit. And then I was just doing well. And then I went away to Edinburgh.
Yeah.
And I'm basically back to where I started.
Yeah,
I have been 10 kilograms heavier than this, I realise, so that's something.
That's good.
So I've been over... You were talking about being over 100 kilograms.
Well over. I still am now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but you're huge. I've been... tall.
Yeah.
I've been over 100 kilograms. I'm now... I'm back at over 90, which is very disappointing for me.
Yeah, but that's the fringe. You need a treat.
Yeah.
And you can't, you know... drink all the time and smoke all the time or because it ruins the show, but a big hamburger doesn't ruin the show as long as you don't eat it in the hour before. So you just end up eating like someone who's just found out they're shortly going to prison every day, just eating like a trucker or a dying king. That's what I did.
I just think the emotional... The difficulty of getting through the it's so weird because it shouldn't be difficult. It's like an hour's work a day.
And a fun festival with all your friends.
But yeah, it's so emotionally devastating, I think. It's like, it's really...
You've watched a dog piss on your own face.
Yeah.
It's time for a hamburger.
Yeah. But everyone willingly goes back. Do you think this year will be a turning point? Do you think people... A lot of people said they wouldn't go back. I'm not sure I want to go back immediately anyway.
I think a lot of people who had a tough one this year will not want to have a tough one again.
Yeah.
And I think it won't be any nicer next year. And apparently they're already... The people who rent out things to the fringe in Edinburgh are already pre-gouging up the prices for next year now.
Right.
So it's... Yeah. It's just going to get more and more Thunderdome-y. But like some version of the Hunger Games where you have to be really rich to play in the Hunger Games, where it's only taking place in the middle quadrant where they're all already wealthy. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's not good though. Yeah.
No, it made me... I mean, it's always been a pretty middle class and a pretty white festival.
Yeah.
But it just feels like, you know, I don't think... When I first went up, I was, you know, I didn't have any money at all and I was able to go and afford to see shows and I was, you know, we did it very cheaply and it was paid for by a, you know, college or whatever.
I think it's cut the middle out.
Yeah.
Because you can still see, there's so much free stuff or pay what you want stuff that you can, if you queue up, you can get in for free and things like that. That the two versions of the fringe now are, I'm not troubled by an insane, like £180 a night, 2-star Travelodge bill for 5 nights, or I'm sleeping in a hostel with a bunch of terrifying backpackers and sneaking into free shows. But that middle group of audience that would sort of see shows that cost £9 or whatever and to stay in a kind of student flat.
Yeah.
There's no middle anymore. I think it's been carved out. Yeah.
But you know, like someone like Simon Munnery, who's my age, and Tony Law, both camped like outside of
the centre. That's not good.
That's absolutely insane.
That is
like big men in their 50s camping.
It's like something from the Dust Bowl. Well, I have to be outside of the town and I take my wagon in and sell my jokes. It's going to be like Grapes of Wrath, where you're going to end up being breastfed by a woman to get your strength back up so that you can do another show.
Well, it doesn't sound too bad.
Yeah. That it'd be a great way to fly her while latched.
There's got to be a way to. But you know, again, I don't know if I'm just an old man looking back. I don't particularly look back at the 90s as a very happy time. I think the 90s, I think I had a horrible time all the way through Edinburgh. But the actual fringe itself did at least feel like you could get your show seen.
Yeah.
You could make up a show as you went along as well. You know, you could improve a show.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
I know a lot of people do work in progress now, but you could go with an idea and see how it went, and
do
you
it organically.
Know. Yeah.
Yeah,
and it felt small enough that it was, you know, you could get to know you meet people and get to know. Now it's just, and even this year was apparently 2007 levels of number of shows, so
something like that. Yeah,
so it'd gone back
late noughties.
So we'd lost quite a lot of shows, but also it was 50%. Was it some 25%?
27% audience down.
Yeah.
For the ticketed venues.
But that must mean. Like closer to if that there's that many fewer shows.
Yeah, selling a lot. The disparity is that the shows were down by half as much as the audience.
Yeah,
so it wasn't in lockstep, and that is what made people who have some people who have like great shows and are in great venues have like not bumper sold out shows, which is what they absolutely used to and should yeah. have, because there just wasn't enough people around.
Sure.
Yeah.
And so for you. The Monkey Barrel was a mix. I paid for my ticket in advance, but you could.
Good.
But you could pay.
They reserve. They keep 10% of the tickets back, no matter what.
Yeah.
So you're sold out when you reach 90% sold, and then you can just queue up, and it's to make sure that you know there's still an element of being able to get in for free.
Yeah.
And to kind of dilute the tyranny of the organized.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it seemed to be a lot of good shows on at the Monkey Barrel, and it seemed to be a well run.
It's the fairest deal as well
yeah.
for the acts. The acts get more money from the tickets as
right.
well.
Yeah. yeah.
So it just who'd have thought that offering a less crippling deal would have been appealing.
I mean the stand have done that for a while, I guess. I don't know how the deals compare, but the stand deal was always quite good. But yeah, the other.
Yeah. But the stand always seemed more like not like a closed shop, but
no,
it seemed like
it.
You need to be pretty elite to climb over that wall
yeah.
if you weren't, you know, known.
No, for sure.
Known to them. But for that's sure. just an outside assumption.
It's all interesting stuff for me. Not so much for the listeners.
No.
It might be interesting for the listeners, and you know, fuck them. It's not their show. If you were God, Pierre.
Hmm?
You were God.
If I was God,
yeah. Why would you have people have to pray to you for things that are clearly need sorting out? Why wouldn't you just sort it out?
There's no fun in that.
Oh, okay.
They've got to learn.
Okay, that wasn't my question. Okay. If you were God,
yeah.
What flavour would you have made ejaculant? Because it's
ejaculant.
Yeah, ejaculant.
Okay. What flavour?
Yeah, because it's like God wasn't even considering people were going to eat this stuff.
It's like it never occurred to him.
Yeah.
But we know it must have. That's the fun thing about God.
And then he chose that flavour.
He said, I know what people deserve. But if it was strawberry milkshake, then you wouldn't go, yum, this ejaculant yeah. taste of strawberry milkshake. You would go, oh no, I made a type of milkshake that's just like a big frothy pint of cum. I suppose what I'm saying is that the taste of cum would be the superior, like, everything else would become a subset of it almost by force,
yeah.
wouldn't it?
No, I hadn't thought of it that way, and that's your genius.
And imagine the horror of if you didn't know that and you had a strawberry milkshake, and then you tasted cum and you'd go,
yeah.
You'd be very worried about the person.
Yeah.
Until someone kindly explained that, no, that's how it all is. Do you think the issue is with it more with taste or texture?
I mean, I haven't eaten that much of it myself.
Yeah.
It's
very albumin.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
It's not, you know.
No one's adding that texture to food, are they? Outside of some fairly niche dishes. They tend to cook it out.
They do, yeah. 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 I mean, some people like it.
Yeah.
I've heard.
Yeah.
I've never met any of those people. Good, good point. Very good point. If you had a silo, what would you store in it?
What do you mean if? If I had a silo, like a really like big agricultural silo.
Yeah, if you can put anything you like in there.
Strawberry flavored cum. I don't know. A silo. That's a good question. It would have to be something that kept. You wouldn't want to keep avocados in a silo. That would be a nightmare. God, I don't know. Well, I would. What would be the funniest thing to store for someone to discover? Just home and garden, just every edition.
Yeah.
You'd be terrified. You go, there's a body under these magazines. A silo full of old house.
Yeah, it'd be quite
a magazines,
like,
yeah.
Doll parts.
Doll parts.
Parts of dolls, but just like a silo full.
But it would have to be maybe just the left leg.
Yeah.
If it was assorted doll parts, you could conceivably try and tell yourself, no, there's a chance this is a former toy factory. If it was just left legs of dolls, you'd go, no, a man wrought this. This is bad. We should leave. I think so, yeah.
Yeah, good. It's all right. That's fine.
I'm going to go with left legs of dolls.
That's fine.
To upset whoever stumbles across it long after my death.
That's good. Something occurred to me then and it's gone. It's gone. That's what happens when you get old.
Yeah.
It's not so, you know, it's not such... Enjoy being young, that's what I'd say. Enjoy your young life. I'll ask you another emergency question to get out of that embarrassment. I was going to ask, this is a question, but then if you're on the Isle of Man, are there any celebrities from the Isle of Man? Did any celebrities go to your school? I guess either in South Africa when you were in infant school.
I don't know about my sort of weird infant school in South Africa, but yeah. Well, the Bee Gees were born on the Isle of Man.
Wow.
But they fled.
Yeah.
Your voices are too high, they said. The dogs are upset, and they kicked them off the island. You're upsetting all the animals. My school, yeah. There's a guy called Mad Jack Churchill.
Oh, yeah.
Who went to my school, who's the only officer, the only soldier in World War II who carried a sword and a bow and arrow. And he did a commando beach assault on German positions in Norway playing bagpipes with his sword on because he was unwell in a courageous way. He sort of escaped prisoner of war camps and captured a whole German unit on his own and was just sort of generally mad.
Yeah.
And has quite a long Wikipedia entry dedicated to how unusually mad he was.
Okay.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's all right.
That's quite a classic sort of like old school kind of person.
Yeah.
It's not a pop star.
No. He's no Bee Gees.
He's no Bee Gees.
He's done all right.
His high voice would have alerted the German sentries. So that would, you wouldn't want to do a sneak attack with the Bee Gees, Richard. That's all I'll say.
So I saw on your website, on my diligent research of your life.
I'm just laughing at the idea of the high-pitched whispering in a sort of D-Day scenario. That's really... You make yourself laugh.
It's all right. As long as someone's laughing, all that matters in this job.
You saw my website.
Yeah. There's a sketch show called Cuts.
Yeah.
Is that anything happening with that? No.
Me and my colleague, comedy friend, collaborators, Theo and Johnny, who are friends of mine, we thought we'd write some sketches because we've got nostalgic for when we all wrote sketches together. Sort of 10 years ago or whenever it was. And it was good fun. And then we got some comedian friends cobbled together some resources with Stuart Laws, the great, fantastic comedian and producer and director from Turtle Canyon.
Yeah.
And we filmed it. And we put it online. And people said, ha, ha, ha. And that was it. They're good sketches.
It's an interesting, it's sort of dark but funny as well, which is a good combination.
The Paella Hound.
So was it just made for online and there was no...
We sent it to people.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, yeah. Or they just said nothing. If we said to them, hey, would you like a sketch show written by three guys who met at Cambridge? Don't worry, we're all white. And don't worry, we're all privately educated. If you would like to really upset everyone in the world, you could give us a massive sketch show. much less. You would have probably upset most all the other white guys who met at Cambridge who also did sketch.
Yeah.
They'd be the most angry, followed by everyone else. So, yeah, we didn't have high hopes for it. But it was fun to make some sketches and put them on YouTube.
Yeah.
And the cast is really good.
It is really good.
People were really nice about doing it.
Yeah.
Thank God. Because if we'd had to do it, I don't think it would have been as good. So we just got people who are better at acting than us.
There were some good actors.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I suppose that's the way forward is just to because it's very high production values. I think that's why.
That's down to Stu and Turtle Canyon. I mean, and Matt Riley, who the reason the whole thing happened, I should say, is because Matt Riley, who's a director, messaged me on Instagram, just DM'd me saying, "Do you want to make some sketches?" And that's what sparked the whole thing off. He's great. Yeah. So I highly recommend. He's made loads of high end adverts. That's probably why it looks so good.
Okay.
Him and Stuart Laws.
What's interesting is that's possible to do. You know, I mean, I think for what it's weird to think of Cambridge graduates struggling to get TV shows as well as everyone else. But you know, anyone can do that to some degree and make stuff on their phones if necessary or whatever.
As long as you have a friend who works for a production company.
Well, but you can get stuff up online. You can do
stuff.
So, you know, so I mean, it is the way to get past those gatekeepers who, I mean, sketch shows is now probably the hardest thing to get on and stay on, I think, isn't it?
They're too expensive.
Yeah.
That's what I've been told repeatedly. Yeah. But no, if I had any gumption, I'd just be filming myself doing silly voices on TikTok, I have some silly voices and things that I can do, but I'm just lazy and I'm just... Do you have that thing where you go, but if I tried and failed, then that would be worse than the success I can imagine in my head?
For sure. Well, I did for a long time, I think. I did, you know, I think in the end I just thought, get on with stuff and see how it goes.
Yeah.
Because I think in the end, I just decided I don't, as long as I like what I've made, and even if I don't, some of it I don't like.
At least you made something.
Well, you know, at least it's done. It's better than doing nothing. So, you know, I think the end goal isn't to go, people go, oh, why isn't Rehearsed Upon TV? You go, well, you know, when I started out, maybe I thought, oh, yeah, maybe. But, like, it would be a backward step to put this on TV.
Yeah, people would say, oh, can we cut the bit about strawberry cum? And you'd say, well, that's the heart of the show.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the beating heart of the show.
But you wouldn't get any of the stuff. But also, it would. Other people would get involved in it.
They'd fuck it up. Yeah.
Other people would fuck it up. Other people would take the money. Would go elsewhere. You know, we make money on this, and then we can put that money into making other stuff.
Yeah.
If we did it through TV, that money would just go to someone sitting on TV.
It's all about cutting out the middleman now.
Yeah,
that's the future.
So you know, it's more important to do the stuff than in fact, it's not. You know, when I was young, I wanted to be like famous and most successful comedian of your generation, blah blah, and then you know, then I quickly worked with Steve Coogan and Chris Morris. Probably it's not going to be me then. And
as an intimidator,
and then you know, but then you realise it's still much better not to have all that stuff anyway. In a lot of ways, creatively speaking, anyway,
you're certainly harassed less.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
That's what we can say.
Yeah.
As we stride through Leicester Square completely anonymously.
It's true.
Another fine day of not being harassed.
I think being
with able praise to, for the quality of my work.
I think being able to do what you want to do and you know, is more important. No. You know, if TV's watching, I will do it. If the money's right.
Yeah.
They're not watching. I'll do the puppet show on TV if you want.
Yeah.
Last chance.
You could be like the British, who's the American guy with the annoying Jeff Dunham?
Yeah.
You could be the British Jeff Dunham.
I hope so.
Yeah.
That's what I
can't imagine a more insulting thing to say to you than you're the British Jeff Dunham.
You never know what the future's going to bring. That's the thing. So, like, you could do something and it suddenly takes off and then you're not in control of your destiny anymore.
That's true.
What you have to do is do things that never quite take off.
Yeah.
So you're always, you know, if you can't fly a plane, as long as it's on the ground, you're okay.
Yeah. It's like a weird car.
Yeah.
Still drive it places.
A weird safe car.
Yeah. Just taxi to work in a plane.
Right. We're gonna wrap it up in a second. Look, Pierre, if you could go into a chrysalis and dissolve and come out as anything you wanted to come out as,
yeah.
what would you come out of the chrysalis as?
It could be anything.
Yeah. It's a way of looking into your mind.
Is this from the Jos Norris episode where you didn't believe him? About,
yeah, it is.
About, what was it, butterflies have the same memories?
Yeah, he said that caterpillars dissolve
completely yeah.
And then when they come out, they can remember, the butterflies remember stuff. That
even though they turned into goo, yeah.
Even though there's no fucking way of testing a butterfly's memory.
I think there is.
There's no way of testing a butterfly's memory.
They went straight to an earlier food source.
Yeah, fuck it, it doesn't mean anything.
And they could name all the 1966 World Cup squad as they did it. But the voice is so quiet, it's hard to...
It is from that, but then it's it's an interesting question.
Yeah. Emerges anything.
We'll learn a lot about you from this.
What's the best thing to be that isn't a human? Probably a sort of Labrador owned by quite a wealthy family. They have a good time.
I think they do.
Would that be the best? Or can I be different people?
You can be different people. You can be yourself.
I just come out as Liz Truss. Just be like a second Truss. Imagine the chaos you could cause. You could really wreck a fucking life, couldn't you? Get the nuclear codes.
Yeah.
Frighten a few other countries. Wander around Downing Street just in your pants, just screaming. By the time they realised it was Truss 2, the damage would be done.
Do you think that might already have happened with Liz Truss? And there's, I think
by
there
the
might
time
be
this comes out?
No, I think there might be a second one already doing all the pork markets and that sort of stuff.
Sort of saying weird things about cheese. Do you think that the reason that speech was so weird is because it was a sort of imperfect clone from a chrysalis? That the real Liz Truss was watching on TV going, more time in the chrysalis needed for the next shambling clone. Yeah, I think that's a viable conspiracy theory.
I don't think Liz Truss is going to be Prime Minister when this podcast comes out. That's my best...
It'll be Truss too.
All the time everyone said Boris Johnson's going, I said it'll still be Prime Minister when this goes out.
Yeah.
Even though this is going out in about 3 weeks from now. I think Liz Truss won't be the Prime Minister in 3 weeks' time. And if I'm wrong, I'll give everybody in this audience chlamydia. I was going to offer them something that I thought they might take me up on it.
Yeah.
Look, it's been lovely to talk to you. What is there anything else approaching, coming up soon in on your horizons?
Whenever I do the tour of the show, why can't I just enjoy things? That's going to be going around the place.
Yeah.
And hopefully a London run at some point as well next year. It'll probably be like early next year. What else? Bud Pod with me and Phil Wang.
Yeah.
Have a listen, see if you like it. Don't listen to episode 51 first. Does anyone remember what the nadir was? 51 or 53? Don't listen to that one first. Save that one for when you're feeling strong. The early 90s was a strong brace of episodes, I seem to remember.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd say listen to those.
Did it find its feet quickly, or was it...
It was fairly shambling.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was. They all have something to recommend them.
Yeah.
The episodes, I'd like to think. What else? What else do I do? I'm blanking.
I don't know.
The specials on YouTube, Quiet Ones, the one for free. You could just watch it all for free on YouTube.
You should definitely do that. It's one of those comedians that it's what I really love in an Edinburgh show, when you just get wrapped up in an idea and then you're kind of uncontrollably laughing at the thing. And it's my favourite kind of
thank you.
Comedy. So it's a great show.
I should say you can buy the audio of the special as an album from £800 Gorilla Records.
Okay.
So if you want to listen to it, do that.
Yeah.
Instead of whatever the alternative is.
Just put the YouTube one on and don't look at the video.
Try not to touch your phone in your pocket as you walk around. We've all tried it. The long, unskippable adverts always fuck it up for ball shavers or whatever it is. Whatever dystopian grocery delivery service has been started that week.
Probably sponsoring this week's episode, so I will not...
Probably sponsoring Bud Pod. And thank you very much.
Thank you for your sponsorship.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, please give it up for the amazing Pierre Labelli. Come and see his stuff. He's brilliant. Thank you very much. We'll be back next week with Sally Phillips and not Reese Jismith, who you've heard already last 2 weeks ago. What? You have been listening to Rahulastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Pierre Novelli. Thank you to Scant Regard. They're here again playing the music. It's nice of them to come in. I'm indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. And thank you also to Chris Evans. Not that one, or that one. Come on. Or not any of the, not the Daily Telegraph editor. Be stupid. Thank you very much to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre. Thank you to Chris Evans' many children. And the ones I know of and the ones that no one knows of. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz of GoFasterStripe.com production.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Thanks for listening. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for all your Richard Herring download and book needs. Go to RichardHerring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can. And make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.